The Art of Leadership Network.
Everything inside of me said, this is going to be a train wreck from day one. And then it actually turned out to be worse than I thought it was going to be.
Welcome to Leaders in Living Rooms. I'm your host, Sean Morgan, bringing you access and insights to leaders and their stories. Have you ever had that moment where you thought you were through the storm only to look up and see a new squall line coming? I have many times in life, and it's kind of eerie actually just thinking about it. Today's interview is with Greg Lindsay. He's a church planter, had a crash and burn in that ministry, and years later, God called him back into ministry. And he gives us the arc of this amazing story, how he and his wife, Stacy, really surrendered to what God has done and called them to do, and stepped into this crazy situation, taking a declining church in Colorado. I can't wait to share this episode with you with Greg Lindsay. He gives us so much incredible and heartfelt stories of life and ministry and leadership. When he thought that he was through the storm, he found out it was getting worse. He talks about duct tape and dreams, and just the loyalty to what God is calling you to do and walking away from what the world would look at as success. So it's one of my longer introductions, but Greg's one of my favorite people, has been a good friend, and it's been a long time coming for me to share Greg's story and the story of Discovery Church and Greg's leadership with you. I can't wait to do that. I want to pause and thank our episode sponsor, Food for the Hungry. You've heard that on almost all our episodes because they're brilliant and they make this happen. So just pause for a second. They make this happen. We could not do this without Food for the Hungry, who puts resources behind bringing this work to thousands of people who listen, and we're so grateful. Hit them up. Food for the Hungry is at fh.org. If you're a church, hit up fh.org/churches for their partnership information with churches. I really and sincerely hope you do that. And here we go with Greg Lindsay at Discovery Church. All right, podcasters, we are welcoming Greg Lindsay to the show, who's been a longtime friend, a first-time guest, and somebody who's personally just taken some risks for me and stepped out in faith. And it's really resulted in involvement in the cohorts that we do and some incredible changes and encouragement and advancement in the leaders that really came under Greg's tutelage. He sort of stepped into a mentor role with us. So we've been friends through that. I've been ever thankful how our friendship has developed really even since then. And I've been looking forward to the day that I got to bring him on the podcast. So Greg's leading a church called Discovery Church in Colorado Springs. Greg, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Sean. It's such an honor to be with you, bro. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is great. So large parts of our content on this podcast, Leaders in Living Rooms, is devoted to transitions leadership. And it's really the idea that there's a lot of energy that goes into planning for succession, but there's the mantle of leadership resting on one person's shoulders after succession. And a lot of people feel like, okay, glad that thing's over with, glad that succession's over with. And formally, the baton passes over with, but there is so much hard rowing to be done after the baton pass. And you have a great story of being called into this church in Colorado Springs and then God using you in some great ways. So tell us a little bit about your call into ministry, some of the early parts of your ministry, and then being called into Discovery Church there in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, so, you know, I grew up for the most part, first 16 years of my life, a Church of Christ kid, which is a real problem for me because I love rock and roll music. And when I started dating, who's now my wife for almost 40 years, when we were 16, she took me to Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, heard Bob Russell for the first time, experienced Southeast for the first time, and I was honestly hooked. I had the privilege of getting to be, I was a 16-year-old dude and got to meet Bob Russell when, I don't know, Bob was, I think, 37 or 38 years old. And Southeast wasn't quite the church it is now back then. And Bob took an interest in me. We used to play a lot of basketball. hang out a lot. And he started to cast vision for me. You need to lead a church. And I had no interest at all in doing that. I said, nope, I'm going to do this or that. I want to make money. And no thanks. Well, ended up going to law school and started practicing law. And Bob, for 10 years, I practiced law. I was in the courtroom in Louisville, Kentucky, and Southern Indiana for 10 years. And Bob continued when he'd see me, say, man, you need to be leading the church. You need to be leading the church. And so finally, and around the year 2000 or so, he convinced me that that was it. And off we go to plant a church in North Carolina. So we planted a church in Raleigh, North Carolina, and went really, really well. And there's a whole nother chapter here of my story that we really don't have time to get into today, but it's very public, and you can go to discovery.church if you want to find out more about that. But about 6 years later, God led us to this church in Colorado called Discovery Church, which was struggling, to say the least.
So what was attractive about the church, or was it not attractive at all? Was it just sort of God seems to be calling us?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Sean. There wasn't much that was attractive about it. With all due respect to the very few people who are still a part of the church today that were there when we got here, they were a great group of people. But we came out, they brought us out in June of 08, and they said, we want you, but we're not sure you want us, and we want you to meet us. And we did. And honestly, man, I was ready to go home and say no thanks. And, a quick story, we pulled in to meet with the associate pastor and his wife for dinner that Sunday night before flying home Monday morning. And we got there about 10 minutes early, pulled in the parking space at On the Border. And my wife says to me, so we're going to call the girls. And I was like, we have four daughters. She's like, I was like, for what? She said, to tell them we're moving to Colorado. I was like, what? Did you just experience what I experienced today? I mean, I had preached two services in a room that seats 450 people, and there was probably a total of 50 adults in the room between the two services. And they had been in decline for 3.5 years. I would be the third lead pastor coming in, and great, great people, but man, challenge after challenge after challenge. And I think I saw all of them. And we ended up calling our girls, and she says, well, I think this is where God wants us to be. And the truth is, Sean, even though I pushed back on that, I felt that too. But everything inside of me said, this is going to be a train wreck from day one. And then it actually turned out to be worse than I thought it was going to be once we got here. So,
wow. So let's just pause there for a second. I want to go back to that phrase in a minute. It turned out to be worse than we thought, and unpack that. But there's a lot of transitions leaders out there. I mean, we have a few thousand people that listen to this, and we're thankful for them, but there's even more. If you do the math, about half the churches in the United States will transition to a new lead pastor in the next decade.
Yes.
That's 150,000 baton passes in local churches across the United States. So there's a ton of people. So this idea of seeing a church, not having it be attractive or being attracted to a lot of things, maybe on the surface, but sensing God might be in this and calling, I just think that's so essential. This is less about planning and strategy and those types of things, and it's more about discernment and how God is working and the Holy Spirit is revealing that. So would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I had another offer on the table at the time that they brought us out and would have allowed us to stay where we were living, two or three times as much money, leading a not-for-profit, wasn't leading a church. But I'm just telling you, in my heart, in my gut, I knew this is where we were supposed to be, but I saw every single challenge. And honestly, after we told the associate pastor, my wife was kicking me under the table at On the Border to tell them, and I delayed for a couple hours. I'm serious. And finally, she just looked at me and said, you going to tell them or not? And so I finally said the words, and his wife squealed, and they started texting the search team, telling them they're coming. And honestly, I'll never forget, Sean, I laid in bed at the Hilton Garden Inn that night before we flew home the next morning, and I thought to myself, man, I just signed a death warrant on my family. Mm-hmm. We're going to come out here, and this is going to be miserable, and we're going to bury a church. That was just, I can throw I can throw everything I've got at this. It's not going to be enough. And like I said, actually, when I got here, found out that the situation was even harder than I thought it was going to be.
It's so like God. You know, we have these stories in the Old Testament of impossibility. Mm-hmm. And God works in that, right? Yes. Oh, we could never, with an army this size, fight an army that size. And we're so stuck on the numbers and the practical and what's seen and what's known and the strategic and the plan. We don't leave room for God. The lead pastor of a church, that is a great place for God to work his story of impossibility and work his hand and work a miracle. So you guys were obedient, like me and most of the people I'm close with. We start to hear the voice of the Holy Spirit first through our brides. Kicked under the table.
No doubt.
That's a beautiful thing. So you make the move, you come out here. It seems like, oh my gosh, we've just signed a death warrant on our family, my four girls. Like what is the future going to hold? It doesn't look good. And then it gets worse. So tell us about that.
Well, life gets worse and the church got worse. So, you know, I mentioned, you know, having a bad season, crashing and burning in ministry. And, what I found out, so I came out, preached my first sermon or two. We were still having two services, even though we had less than 100 people in a high school auditorium that sat 450 people. It just felt really weird. The week before I arrived, they announced that the new pastor was going to be there the next week. And I have a friend now who showed up at church for the first time the week before I came. And just to give you some perspective here, he and his wife attended a local Church of Christ at the time. They were helping a young girl in her 20s. They're trying to help her find a church, and the Church of Christ was not a fit. Their church wasn't. So they show up at Discovery. When the worship leader and the band walked out on stage to start the service, the worship leader said, "Good morning, you three." They were the only three people at the in the auditorium when the service started.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And I didn't find that out until after I'd been here a month and we had lunch and I got to know him a little bit. But so I preached my first weekend. And then on Tuesday of the following week, my first week in the office, the chairperson of the search committee came by and said, "Hey," and was really not comfortable and feeling pretty awkward and said, "Hey, can we talk?" I was like, "Sure." Anyway, that's the conversation where I found out that he said, "Well, we haven't exactly told this church your story." And I said, what does it exactly mean? Well, we haven't told them. We thought it'd be better if you told them. So in my fifth week as pastor of this new church, new to us in Colorado, I told my story. And half the church left in the next 3 months. Mm. So the story got worse before it ever started to get better. We ended up on a personal front. We couldn't sell our house in North Carolina. To this day, I don't know why. It was a beautiful house. It was priced right. I mean, this is 2008. I get that. But houses were selling around it. It ended up, after 2 years, we ran out of money to make rent payments here and payments there. We got foreclosed on. I got four daughters, two in high school, one in middle school, one in elementary school. You know, daughters aren't cheap. And high school girls are high maintenance at times. And it was... the first 2 years in Colorado, honestly, Sean, I wanted out of here. I remember our first Easter was April of 2009, and it snowed. It snowed on our very first Easter in Colorado Springs, and I'm like, "You got to freaking be kidding me." And I remember, you know, paltry attendance, less than 200, 150, something like that. I was the last person in the building because we were portable church. I remember walking through the high school and I pushed open the door to walk out to my car. And I always parked far away from the building with this vision that new people were going to show up and I want to give them the good parking spaces. Weren't really any new people. And as soon as I pushed the door open, snow just kind of and cold wind smacked me in the face. And I just remember that walk to my car like, "God, what are you doing? Where are you in this?" And that was probably... that was probably the low point for me.
So how did God use that journey, that first year, even the first year or two, the declining attendance early on? It sounds like about the 3 to 6 month point, really like low point of losing half the church that was there when you had showed up. How did God use that to refine you and get you to a place? Because obviously the story changed.
Right. Well, you know, so I thought I had reached the depth of my brokenness and need to be broken, but I realize now, 14 years later, looking back on it, that there was a part of me still, as hard as the situation looked like and as desperate as it looked, that I say, you know, I signed a death warrant on my family. There was a part of me that came, that believed that if I came out here and I threw all my energy, all my talent, all my leadership, my communication ability at that, we can turn this thing around. And I really believe that God wanted me to understand, yeah, you can, and we're going to, but you can't do that without me. I was trying to. I mean, I wasn't like, God, I've got this, but that's just my default position. That's who I've always been. And I was reading Mark Batterson not too long ago, and he used two words together that I'd never heard together or thought of together. And the words were raw dependence, just raw dependence on God. And honestly, that's what God still needed to teach me. The beautiful thing in my life and story was that John Eldridge's work at Ransomed Heart, Wild at Heart, really was a big piece of saving my life, saving my ministry, saving my family, my marriage. And so when I came out here, I had a mutual friend introduce us, and Craig McConnell on John's team became my mentor. And we started meeting probably early on. We were meeting once every week, 2 weeks. And he started really going after that striving, driving piece of me. And his influence in working on the inner man with me, coupled with what God was showing me, that you can't do this without me, Sean, was the stuff that really, I think, not only needed to happen, but began to change me, and then ultimately began to change the story.
It's so interesting hearing a detailed story about being pursued by God. Because, you know, we sing these songs about he leaves the 99 and, oh, it mm-hmm. sounds so beautiful and stuff, until it's you.
Yes.
Until it's you, and that you realize being pursued by God is being refined, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or use the word foundry or crucible. How about that?
Yes.
That might be a
yes.
little bit better. Refined kind of could sound fun.
Yeah.
Crucible, not so much. And
yeah.
I remember talking, you know, I have so many people I get to work with that are just influential across churches, and a group of people that were really close and influential in Willow Creek. And obviously the whole thing melted down there at the end under Bill's right. leadership. And thankfully they brought in some great leaders and have a bright future. But I remember having this conversation about God cared more about having Bill than he cared about a false reputation of Bill's ministry or the church.
Yes.
And if he's not done refining Bill, he's going to pursue Bill. And if there's dark corners, he's going to bring light to him because he wants us completely surrendered. And so it's so cool to hear you talk about that season of God's not done. This got worse, but it was a process of refining you, and you get to the point where God makes it clear, like, you can't do this without me. Like,
right.
you've been given gifts and talents, but you will be the lid if you try to do it without me. So that's a beautiful story. So what happened after that? What was the next seasons like? How did you start to feel like, oh, these are the things that God is beginning to do that are different and new and fresh and vision and all that?
Well, I think, and I don't want to oversimplify, but I think my journey with Craig, you know, that became a focus for me, and the internal work that God was doing me, and really beginning to see myself, despite the fact I'd been through 3 years of great counseling, I'd worked hard on my stuff and my story. There was still more that God wanted to do, and really seeing myself as a beloved son. And despite all the mistakes I've made in my life and the things I've done, I mean, that's happening side by side with, you know, I'm continuing to try to make the hard decisions as to what do we do with this church? Like I said, half the people left, but I have to give credit to the other half that stayed. And they're probably, I don't even know the number, 30 or 40 people of them still around in the church today who believed, you know, they were talking for a year and a half before I ever got here. Why don't we just shut this thing down? We drive by, I mean, Colorado Springs got a lot of churches. And we drive by 15, 20 churches to get here every week to come to this high school at 6:30 in the morning and set up. What are we doing? And they believe, the core that held together believed that God had a big purpose for Discovery Church. And honestly, I did too. And so continue to pursue what are the changes we need to make. I mean, the next thing that really happened in the story was, you know, we had to let the associate pastor go because as soon as they hired me, they couldn't afford both of us. And he's still a friend to this day and he's a good man. And, but that was hard. And he and his wife left the church for a while, went to another church. He actually jumped on another church staff and we were a part of helping him land somewhere else. But, you know, that was hard. He'd been there since day one, since the church had been planted. So 5.5 years.
Wow.
And he had seen them through the transition. And he was one of the primary voices in bringing me there. And now I'm telling him, I'm sorry, buddy. And so we had that happen. And then as we were talking, we didn't have elders. There was no elders, no leadership in place. The elders that had been there before in the old regime had left the church.
Wow.
And so I ask a group of guys, six men, to meet me at the office one night. And I said, hey, here's the deal. I can't do what God's asking me to do here. We can't do that. I can't do it by myself. And so would you join me in this journey? And I'm not going to give you a title. I'm not going to give you a name badge. I'm not going to parade you across stage and nobody's going to know who you are. But you're going to quietly be involved in every decision we make as a church. And every one of those men said, I'm in. And so we started this journey together. I mean, they kind of acted as elders, but we didn't call them that. And nobody even knew that they were there. But I had accountability and I had someone to dream with me. And we started to dream about it. And we said, man, we got to reinvent ourselves. And then this little tiny 10,000 square foot storefront space in front of Costco that was a pump it up birthday party place for kids, a for lease sign went up on it. Pump it up was going out of business. The rent was 2.5 times what we were paying at the high school, which we could not afford. I thought there's no way they would want a church in there, but we reached out. Non-believers in Boulder actually owned the building, and they said, yeah, we'd entertain the thought of a church. Just submit your financials. And I was like, oh, that's dead. That's done. But you know, it's cool, Sean, because we went back to our mother church, Sunnyside Christian Church, planted Discovery. Almost, it'd be 19 years ago next week now. And we said, hey, will your elders come over and just take a look at this space with us? And so they came over and we cast some vision. They went away and prayed and thought about it. And they ended up co-signing the lease with us so that we could get into that space. And we moved about 100 people, 120 people maybe at the time into that little storefront space. And we grew to 1,000 in the next 5 years. God really started to do something. And they never had to help us make a payment. I mean, the Discovery story, and we can throw these terms around all the time, but I'm telling you, man, this story, there is no explanation for the story other than God over and over and over again. And I think that's exactly what he was trying to teach me in that first year or so of the journey. So we got into that storefront space about a year to the date. I preached my first sermon. I think it was August 10th, 2008 in the high school. I preached my first sermon in the building, even though the space wasn't ready. In that little 10,000 square foot storefront space, 1 year to the day later.
So God uses that. They're so interesting. So I'm from Colorado Springs. I don't know if our listeners actually know that. Grew up there, have family there. And when our kids were little, we would travel back there. And my daughter has a birthday near Christmas. So we would go to Christmas and stick around and then do her birthday. And we actually hosted one of her birthday parties at that Pump It Up. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that.
So it's crazy, crazy. And here's another weird circle is Sunnyside. My dad was the architect that designed Sunnyside Christian Church and its building.
Wow.
And has a longstanding awesome. Relationship with them. And I've been involved with their leadership circles. And the giving nature of that church,
yes,
to see the Big C Church across,
yes,
really Colorado Springs, other places too. They have been behind several church turnarounds and church plants that are now mega churches that are actually probably bigger than Sunnyside Church. In some cases, maybe many multiples bigger than Sunnyside Church. So what a great story of a wonderful legacy of a church. So I'm glad you mentioned them by name. But what I want to get into a little bit is some practical things. So you're at this church, things begin to turn around. To go from 100, 150 to 1,000 is this amazing journey, but it's also, in my mind, one of those things that you have to be careful what you ask for because you might just get it. And what did that mean as you began to grow in terms of structure voids? You hear this all the time from church planners who can, they can get up to a couple hundred and they can stretch and make it all work. But when you start growing to 400, 500 and toward 1,000, you have to release authority. You have to hire people that can make things happen without your brain being in the room. How did you build all of that? Who did God bless you with to help you?
Well, I will say that a few things. So those guys that had been in the journey with me, then for a year when we hit the building, about a year and a half later, we ordained them, had some other pastors in town, Eric from Sunnyside, and a couple other guys came over. And so we made them our first elders. Those guys were instrumental in walking that journey with me. But our elders here, you know, we're elder guided and shepherded, but we're staff led. And so, you know, they were there to encourage me, support me, all that. They weren't in the weeds of the day to day. And, you know, we talk about duct tape and dreams a lot at Discovery because, you know, there's a lot of truth to that, honestly, Sean. But, you know, God started to bring us people that were willing to work part-time. You know, we really built a really cool volunteer culture. And then we can talk about this a little later, but we got away from that, which really is disappointing to me. Happened on my watch, so I own it. That's particularly when we moved into the building that we're in now. That kind of happened. And, but it used to be that, you know, there was an excitement and an energy. God's doing something here. You could feel it. We had no sound treatment in the room. The music's loud, bouncing off the walls. The kids' area sucks. We've only got two toilets in the building for in the women's restroom. So ladies would leave the service early and line up so they could go to the bathroom in the lobby. It was chaos, but it was crazy good. And you could just tell God was all over it. But, you know, he brought me good people that for that season were the right people. But that, I mean, I'm looking around today, none of them are still there. There may be a few of them that still attend the church, but none of them are in still staff positions. But, you know, people were willing to sacrifice to be a part of it. I mean, it was pretty cool because, like I said, there's lots of options down the street that had a lot more going on from facility standpoint, even programming standpoint, than we did. But there was a, you know, my story, which I didn't intend to tell a lot once we came out here. Once I had to tell it, that fifth week became very public, and it's become a regular part over 14 years of something I make reference to or talk about, different pieces of it and so forth. And this idea of brokenness and that God wants to bring healing and your story matters, not just your sin, your story matters. That's the foundation the church started to be built on. And honestly, man, it really took off. So I don't know if I answered the question very well, but.
Well, you did in part. You opened up a conversation that I want to pursue around your story. And it's this idea of like, you can preach a lot of stuff, but I heard a pastor recently preach this great message, and we all picked up a rock and went and like deposited in a bucket, you know, and it was this idea of these burdens that you have and God is taking them from you and releasing you and you have to let him. And it was great, but I give it a minus. And the reason why is he wasn't in the story. He wasn't in the arc of this entire great sermon, and you were. You became open and secure enough in what God wanted to do with your story, not covering up parts of brokenness that you just want to kind of go away. You want to repress it, sweep it under the rug. So you used that, you know, that broken and beautiful to reach people right where they were at, right? And there is something to human nature. We have to be convicted of sin to see the beauty of God's love and grace for us. And that can't happen if the church wants to talk about other things outside of our brokenness.
Right.
So there's just a beautiful side I want to pause and recognize of lights on, windows open, broken, beautiful. Let's let God use that in us as a staff and leader circle and the people of our church that I just know reached people's hearts and rung true in their hearts. So I think that is super important. But I do want to go back to some of the structure stuff, because yes. I think a lot of growing churches, and even right now in this era of post-COVID, coming out of COVID sort of thing, there's this question of, do we all just go back to our old job descriptions and do what we used to be doing? Or how do we make adjustments? And there's safety and security in stepping into what's known, i.e. what you used to be doing. And what do we need to do different? And there's some sides to structure in that conversation. And you alluded to something that I think is really important to name in ministry, which is you had people that were talented and helpful and they sacrificed, but they were also, quote, there for a season.
Right.
What does that mean? Talk me through that, because I think that's really important. I was with Carrie Newhoff the last couple of, just 2 days ago. We spent a whole day together, and he said, if I look back over my life, you think you get involved in something and you're just going to plow forward and drive it toward the finish line. But he says, I look back and I go, about every 5 to 7 years, I completely rewire, restructure something. And interestingly enough, Carrie Newhoff, who was a lead pastor at Conexus Church, has now been gone as the lead pastor just as long as he was there as the lead wow. pastor. So his successor literally is almost to the month a lead pastor as long as Carrie was. So even the lead pastor of the church that he's really known for leading in Canada, and there's, to me, I think there's a side to that that we just need to get better at in the church, which is recognizing that God works through seasons almost all the time. But there's like a fear factor in that. You mean like this isn't going to be my job forever? And, you know, what I'm creating here, I'm going to have to let go of and either move on, move up or move out, move over or move on. So talk to me about that whole season, because I think too often people take it personally and then they get mad at you for making a change in their little fiefdom.
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously in the early days, as we were thinking structure, it was, we took what we could get and great people willing to be the scaffolding to build, you know, casting the vision for this to be a place where your story's safe, which I think we've carried on to this day and all of that. But, that seasonal thing was it was hard on me, Sean, because I'm the kind of guy that, man, we get in a foxhole together. My natural tendency is saying, man, we're in this for the long haul. We're in it for life. And, you know, some of those people are no longer there. They've moved on because they decided to. We've helped a few move on because we felt like God had something different in mind. But that's been a struggle for me. And not just, I mean, honestly, not just staff, with people leaving the church too. I mean, that's something I've had to continue to grow up in. But for you to, you know, what I learned was for us to get to the next level, that people, even well-intentioned, good-hearted people, can end up being the lid on, you know, they can't lead kids ministry at the level that it's got to be led differently. And, you know, you get a lot of doers in the early days. In the church of 100, 200, 300 in those days, you get a lot of people who are great doers, but they're not great leaders. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that we ran into was that thing felt so good in that 5 years in that space. It felt like family. It felt there was this connection. I mean, we moved into the new building, which is 65,000 square feet on 10 acres, an old shopping grocery store. And I think we had a staff of 7. And I think 3 of those were part-time. So we're still, because we've always been broke as a church. That's a whole God story, how we got into the building and all of that. But what happened was, one of the things I saw happen was that not only were they not leader type, some of them, they were threatened by people who were.
Yeah.
And that started to create a spirit in our church that honestly, it has taken me years now to try to stamp that out.
Can you be specific where you, how you saw it, how you recognized it? Because this is really important. This is like an intuitive thing probably early on that you had to pay attention to and listen to and validate. And then it became like, oh, this is more than intuition. This is now stuff I'm seeing. And that's what leaders do. They have an intuitive sense of things. The antennas have to be up. So talk us through that.
Well, when you have high capacity people that you feel like you're meeting and interacting with, you know, in a church of that size and that growth stage, you know, I feel like today through COVID and all we've been through, I know the lowest percentage of people by name since way back to we were less than 1,000. I mean, this is the church has turned over. Mm-hmm. There's so many new people, but you know, you get to know people and I feel like you see their talent, you see their ability, you don't see all of it, but you feel like, man, this person's a go-getter, this person's gifted. And, you know, somebody on your team says, yeah, but pushes them aside, diminishes them, doesn't empower them. You know, when that happens with one person, okay. But when that starts happening with two or three or four or five people that you see really have the capacity to be something special in what you're trying to do, and you've got people on your team, and ultimately at the end of the day, and to this day, they may not admit it, but they were threatened by them.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to see that. I started to see that happening. And then, you know, I could talk about a lot of things. I could talk about toxic staff culture for a long, long time, because I feel like I've been working to fix that for the last 7-8 years.
How would you define that in your terms, toxic staff culture?
I think it's, you know, I'm a big unity guy, you know, I'm part of a big unity movement here in the city with churches, and God's doing some amazing stuff. But, you know, obviously I'm that way with my own team too. But it's, we went through years where there were cliques, and there were, rather than us all, you know, kind of moving together, it became popular for some circles to have common enemies on staff. And I'm talking about a season where we weren't all genuinely for each other.
Hmm.
And like I said, I take responsibility for it because it happened on my leadership, but it really happened one person at a time. And the people that did it are not bad people. They're just broken people like we all are. And that, you know, your glory diminishes mine. And so rather than finding a way to help you step into your glory and to advance the kingdom at this thing we do called Discovery Church, I diminish you, I push you away. You know, I suggest to the facilities team leader that you'd be great at cleaning toilets, you know, those sort of things. And so I've had no shortage of that to deal with, honestly, in the last 7-8 years. I'd say that's not fair, up until about 2 years ago.
Hmm.
When I finally felt like we got to a point where that's gone.
Wow. So how did you stay healthy? I mean, you're talking about areas of unhealth, and I think it's good to say, look, these aren't bad people, but they're leading out of their weaknesses. And yep. So as a leader, you don't want to be doing that. So how do you stay healthy personally and in your marriage? What are some of the things you've learned along the way that you feel like you've done some good work with?
Well, you know, I think it all depends on who you have speaking into your life, you know. And look, I'm a huge fan, and have always been a huge fan of the guys that are throwing and going, getting it done in ministry. Bob Russell's been, he still is huge in my life. You know, Don Wilson out at CCV, a lot of guys that God used to build these, Andy Stanley, Stephen Furtick. I mean, I could go through the list, right, of all these great leaders that just are freaking getting it done for the kingdom. And for me, the secret has been what Craig introduced me to. I remember sitting with him multiple times, Sean, and we would be praying, and he'd say, hey, Greg, and he would bait me into this. The first two or three times I was a sucker every time, and he'd nail me. But then I started to know where he was going. But he'd say, hey man, you know, this striving and driving, get it done thing that you've got going on. I'm like, yeah. He goes, yeah, God's not in that. And it was like he slapped me across the face. And at first I wanted to fight him and push back on that, but he started to teach me, you know, that's not what it's most about. And there's a quote that hangs above my chair up off our bedroom where I sit in the mornings. And I don't think it was original to Craig, but he used to say it to me all the time. Who you are and who you're becoming is more important than anything you'll ever do. And so it really started to shift my focus. And then unfortunately for me, Craig died of leukemia in 2016. And I was privileged to get to do a part of his memorial service with John Eldridge and some of the team. And we hosted it at DCC, which was a big honor. But I lost my guy after 8 years of walking life closely. You know, Bob's been a huge voice in my life, but nobody has been a part of shaping Greg Lindsay more than Craig McConnell was. And I don't think anybody ever will be. But what it did for me was it challenged me to continue to have guys like Craig or gals pushing into that part of my life. And I've continued to have them to this day. I've got three or four people. Morgan Snyder over at Ransom Tarts, he's younger than me. But this guy has carried on much of the mantle that Craig carried in my life. That's great. And he speaks truth into me. And the other thing that I've done is I've gotten outside of my comfort zone in my circles. One of my dear friends is a black lady in town who's a pastor, Pastor MJ, and she speaks in a whole different realm than the circles I'm used to running in. You know, the circles I'm used to running in are the guys that are pointing to what do we do next? What's the strategy? Boom, boom, boom. And I'm not saying they're bad guys. They're not. They're walking with God too. But I'm just saying that just working on the inner stuff and just refusing to let go of that. And that it may sound, I don't know, but that's been the key. Having three or four or two real voices in your life you can be totally vulnerable with, transparent with, who are going to press into and even point to, even before COVID hit, Sean, I'm just telling you, you know, I was, let's grow, let's grow, let's grow, let's grow. I got caught up in it. I did, you know, and growing from 100 to 1,000 in that old building and then growing to, you know, I think our best year, 2017, we were averaging over 2,500. There was something in that was good from the perspective. I want to rescue as many people as possible. I want them to experience what I've experienced and all that Jesus can do for you and the healing that can come in your story, not just forgiveness for your sin. But there was a part of that dude that was medicating the pain in my life, and having crashed as a pastor was proving the naysayers wrong. 'Cause I got hurt when I was in the desert out of ministry. I had people tell me I'd never be in ministry again. God wouldn't bless it. I've heard it all. And there was a part, so I got caught up in the growth, man. It's all about grow, 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 grow. And and that needed to be called out. And so when Craig passed away, I started to hang out with another older guy who's an old-time YWAMer from Amsterdam, just a great godly guy who doesn't want to talk strategy at all. And he started really pushing into me is, what is church supposed to look like? What's the church all about? And really, pushing hard against the model that I'd been a part of building for the last probably 10, 11, 12 years at the time. But, you know, there again, he's a guy that speaks into who am I? Who am I for my wife? You ask about my marriage. You know, I think one of the happiest things in Stacy's life today, and we've been through a lot. You've been married 38 years. Jesus and Stacy are the heroes in the story, but it are the people that I have in my life. Because she knows them, and they talk with her, and she knows they're working on me, and she's seeing the fruit of it. So
this was intriguing to me, is what is church? What is church supposed to be? It's interesting. I used to do some strategy sessions with churches, and there was a session where, just to be the antagonist and get the right discussion out on the table, I once asked a room full of church leaders, would you continue doing ministry if you could baptize more people, disciple more people, and bring in more finances to fuel the ministry, but never have a Sunday service ever again? I asked that probably in 2015. And there was some people in the room that were incredibly uncomfortable with that. And yes. One person that was like, no, like church is Sunday morning. And I was like, where do you see that in scripture? You know, show me where Sunday morning, big room full of people, is church, is mandatory, is part of God's plan. And it was just really interesting conversation. Of course, then COVID hit, right? Yes. And it's like,
look out.
Like, can we still be the church? And everyone yes. would be like, yeah, we can absolutely be the church. But I could tell you that in my experience from that one room, only 50% of the people in the room were extraordinarily uncomfortable with it. And maybe 25% of the people in the room said, no, you can't do it. You have to do this. So I'm really interested with this guy you said from Amsterdam. What are your thoughts on that? What is the church? What are you doing different now? What will Discovery be doing different in 2023?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I remember it was November of 2017, our highest attendance year, and regular weekend, no Easter, no Christmas. I was preaching. I remember thinking, wow, there's a lot of people here this weekend. Get to the end of the weekend, find out there were 2,900 and I think 66 people there. We were 34 people away from breaking 3,000. I'm like, yes, we're going to break 3,000. Here we go. And it felt good, Sean. It's that gut thing that gets back to what I felt when I came out to interview with Discovery. It's that same internal heart gut feeling of it felt good for about 20 seconds. And I was like, yeah, 3,000 what? And it really started to freak me out because I realized that lots of spectators, lots of consumers. And, you know, I thought, man, we got to start growing people deeper. We got to start talking about, what does it really mean to pick up your cross and follow Jesus? And so we did that. Beginning of 2018, you will see a shift in even my challenges to people from the stage. And so we were already in decline before COVID hit. Our high watermark was 2017. We lost probably between 200 and 300 people average a weekend over the next few years. And then COVID hit. But John pushing on me, a lot of what I've read and been in God's, where God's had me the last few years, the main thing that we are attacking now is, and I told our team this, particularly my guy on my team who kind of heads up discipleship for us. You know, that's everybody's buzzword. I get it. But what we're up against, our biggest challenge right now is we are trying to teach people that it's not about what we ourselves created them to think that it's all about. And that's the weekend service. And so, you know, we're getting more intentional with discovery groups, and that's a whole nother conversation. But this whole idea of being a sent people, I think that's what it's got to look like moving forward. And we could talk, Sean, you know, we're dreaming about repurposing our building, you know, more of a community hub. Just there's all kinds of stuff that we're dreaming outside the box with. But the bottom line is this, that this has got to be the come and see days, I think, are over. I think it's a both and. So I get really skeptical of the people who say, you know, blow it up, don't have a weekend event or gathering, and it needs to be all house churches. I don't think it's an either or. I think it's a both and. I see the good that we accomplish on the weekend.
Yeah.
But what I've been saying is this is not what it's most about. One of my friends, Roy Moran, pastor in Kansas, says, you know, this weekend experience, this is a great place to start and a terrible place to stop. And so, you know, we've really started to not only say those words, but adopt that in. Okay, so people are saying, what's my next step? Okay, here we go. Let's talk about training you up to lead a discovery group that you can invite your neighbors and friends, coworkers into for 6 weeks and have a conversation about God and life. And so we're really, and then the ransomed heart piece, the wild at heart piece of what we do really fits with that too. And because the first prong of our mission statement is helping people discover their stories. Not their sin, their stories. And we do a lot of work on, man, that stuff that happened to you when you were a kid, teenager, what mom said, what dad did, what dad didn't do, what coach said, that stuff matters. And so that's kind of the approach that we're taking now, but it's really, I don't want to overuse the word, you know, everybody talks about equipping. That's like every church calls himself a real church, right? But, you know, really empowering people. And that's what I've talked to our team about is, look, we can equip people. We can give them some tools. But if we never empower them and release them, what are we really doing? And so that's become more our word. Are we there yet? No. We're in the early stages. You know, Roy turned his church over And it he said it takes about 5 years. And so we're about a year and a half, 2 years into what I'm talking about. We don't have it all figured out, but I see it starting to work.
Love it.
And it's exciting to me. You know, our church today, and it's not, we haven't backed off the excellence that we pursue on the weekends. We're still trying to, I want to mess with people in such a good way. I want to fire them up. I want to challenge them. I want to send them out. I think we do a great job of that. I love what we do on the weekends. So it hasn't gone away, but you know, today we're half the church that we were before COVID hit, attendance wise.
Yeah.
But that's what we're focused on. And it's not because, well, obviously, you know, we're not going to be that again. So now I think the foundation's stronger than it was when we built from where we are now before. And so I'm excited about what God's
doing. That's a beautiful statement. Well, listen, I want to end with one question. I'll turn it over to you. I was going to add, hey, what's the biggest challenge? It's a question I'm asking a lot of leaders now, and I'm learning a lot. The question I want to end with, so thanks for hitting that one, is what would you do differently? If you could go back to 2008 and give yourself advice, what would you get one thing you could do different? What would you advise yourself on?
Well, I think I just described it, Sean. I mean, I would have been far more willing to grow more slowly and invested more in the people that were coming as we grew. And I don't want to, like I said, everybody's talking discipleship. I mean, I think the biggest challenge the church faces today is I said when COVID hit, I said, you know, people left the church, the real disciples didn't. You know, but really, because we didn't even, I mean, man, we were growing and throwing and going. It was all gas on the fire. How do we grow? How do we grow? How do we grow? How do we grow? We didn't even do small groups well until we got to our current building. So I'm 7 or 8 years in. I'm not even doing smaller community stuff. I mean, luckily, thank God that the Wild at Heart, Ransomed Heart message stuff that we were doing with men and women was challenging people and changing lives. That was our primary discipleship tool.
That's great.
But there's more to it than that. So I would have taken my foot off the gas of growth and invested more in the people who were showing up, really work on building that core, really. And I would have hopefully woken up to the fact of this idea of being sent people, that our people are being sent. And it's what they carry out with them is more important than what they receive, you know, when they're here. So God's really just changed my mind about that. And I don't think it's just come because our church is half the size of the glory days.
Love it. Great reflection. Greg, thank you so much for being on the show. Thanks for sharing your story, the transition seasons and how you led through those, but also just the current state of affairs and what you're leaning into and excited about. That's a beautiful thing. So loved having you on the show. We've loved doing cohorts at the Ascent Leader with you. Yeah. So thanks for your trust in this moment, in this podcast episode, but everything along the way too.
Thank you, Sean. It's been a pleasure, man. Love it.
Wow. Such a heartfelt episode. You can sense Greg's a real deal. He really is. And the journey, one of the stories he didn't tell you was that he just was ready to preach his heart out, prepared all week, kind of in one of their lowest moments. And he looked up and there were 12 people sitting in the audience. And that was one of the lowest moments of the church where Greg had a source of his humanity, his human side of frustration. But Greg really let God do a work in him. And that's what I love about Greg. So listen, if you like this episode, if you like what we do with Leaders in Living Rooms, like it, subscribe, put something on social media and share it with your friends. We would be grateful. We already are grateful that you listen, but we would be so grateful for that. And the last thing I need to say is if you're a transitions leader, if these transition stories are helpful to you, you need to dive into our next cohort. It's going to launch in the fall of 2023. You can see more at theascentleader.org. We'd love for you to apply and dive into that. We do have a few spots left, and maybe God's ordained a path for you to be filling one of them. Thanks so much for listening. Cheers. Wow. Leaders, thank you so much for tuning in. We are just blown away by all the things that you guys tell us that this is doing to grow you and develop you. And I'll tell you what, if you feel like this is growing you as a leader, as a person, as a pastor, we would be honored if not only would you continue to listen, but if you would subscribe, if you would get on social and say something so that the people you have influence over can see the ways that this is benefiting you and that they would check us out as well. That would mean the world to us. Thank you so much for listening.